Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. We have myself, Kay Murray, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here in the studio. Throughout the show, we are going to be hearing from our team in Qatar as well. But we will start with the latest news on Cristiano Ronaldo, who has travelled out to Qatar from Lisbon with the Portugal national team today, following the final part of his tell-all interview with Piers Morgan airing. We are now hearing that Manchester United have decided to begin legal measures to terminate his contract. And we're going to talk more about this as we welcome in our Manchester correspondent, Rob Dawson, who is in Qatar. Frank Leboeuf is joining us from LA as well. Rob, what can you tell us about this situation and the measures that the club will be looking to take?
Yeah, well, United released a statement on Friday to say that they're going to take appropriate steps to deal with the Cristiano Ronaldo interview, and we're led to believe that one of those is to terminate his contract. They've decided that Cristiano Ronaldo has gone one step too far, that he's criticised the club too much, he's criticised the manager too much, and it's time for him to leave.
What's been the fans' reaction then, Rob, to it, to this news?
I mean, the fans have largely, that they're backing the decision. You know, that they don't believe that, any player is ever bigger than the club, and they think that, again, that Ronaldo has gone one step too far. He will remain a club legend for what he's done for the club in the past, but, you know, players can't be seen to be criticising the manager, particularly a very popular manager who's only come in the summer, a manager who looks to be turning the club around. And, you know, the feeling on the ground in Manchester is that this is the right choice. Even though it's a club legend, even though it's Cristiano Ronaldo, they're backing the club and they're backing Erik ten Hag.
Does he remain a club legend after this, Craig?
Well, look, there's no doubt this has tarnished his Manchester United career to an extent. However, I don't think it tarnishes his overall legacy in the game, because the guy's achieved so much. I think, unfortunately for him, it's an inability at the end to accept that, as we've discussed over the last 4 or 5 days, an inability to accept that Mother Nature has caught up and he can no longer do what he once did, and managers don't now see him in the light that they once saw him. And for him, that is clearly difficult, really difficult to absorb. Now, that doesn't condone what his actions have been, and that doesn't condone an interview. The interesting thing for me, or one of them, is if these reports of the potential sacking and termination of the contract are correct, is whether his legal team will fight it, and if it'll be a long drawn out affair, or whether they accept it and basically admits he was in the wrong. So I don't know from that respect, but look, he's had 20 years of glittering success. This is a small tarnish, I think, at the end of his career that he could have been doing without.
Rob, do you think that the club are confident that they have grounds to take these measures?
Yeah, certainly. They've been taking legal advice since the interview first started to air on Monday. So, you know, this isn't a sort of a snap decision that they've taken. Every Premier League player signs the same contract, and in there's a very broad clause that allows the club to terminate the contract if they feel the player has brought that club into disrepute. And United certainly feel that Ronaldo has done that. Moving forward from here, that they want this to be resolved very, very swiftly. That there is a suggestion that they may even look to sue for breach of contract if Ronaldo was to sort of to challenge this. They want this over very, very quickly. That they're hoping that Ronaldo will play ball a little bit and help them finish this very, very quickly, because they don't want a long, drawn-out process. And legal action could, you know, it could span weeks and months and even years. And they just don't want that. They want a very, very clean break. They want the United to be able to restart the season after the World Cup in Qatar without Ronaldo, and to move on a fresh start, if you like, under Erik ten Hag.
Frank, what do you make of it all?
Well, I hear all of that, and it makes me sad in a way, because when you see the career of Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, you have to accept the fact that the guy was absolutely exceptional, but it might be an exit of his career after the World Cup, you know, if he doesn't find any other big club. And I think it's sad because he shouldn't be that way. He should have been rewarded for what he did. And now he's they're taking the picture of him in the building. They terminate the contract, out of business. What's going to happen within a month for Cristiano Ronaldo? Really looking forward to seeing how he's going to react to that. Again, that's sad for me because that's not what you want to see when you see the end of a career of a great player.
Gary Neville spoken out about the situation on Twitter. Here is his reaction to the news that we've heard today about the club looking to terminate the contract. He said, "Sad that it's come to a point where arguably United's greatest ever talent is likely to be sacked. It didn't need to be like this. A mature conversation a few weeks ago between both parties could have secured a smooth exit." Do you agree, Stevie?
Do you know what I think? I think in a couple of weeks' time, this will all be, it'll all have disappeared. Because it's raw right now, and yes, it's hot topic right now. And when it's like that, you think, yes, this is going to tarnish his reputation. Because we're thinking about it, we're talking about it. But the truth is, all this is going to disappear. And like people like Maradona, who we know all the other problems he had off the field, has that tarnished his reputation? I mean, if we compare what he did off the field to what Ronaldo's doing now, but yet we don't look at Maradona in any other light other than, I mean, the greatest of all time, in my opinion. And because of that, it hasn't changed my opinion. And the same thing will happen with Ronaldo. Yes, he should go. Yes, he should get the sack. But I'm telling you now, very soon, we'll be all forgotten. No question.
Do you agree, Craig? Will all be forgotten very soon?
Well, I think Rob used the words which I think are perfect, move on. Everybody needs to move on from this, and the cleaner it is for Ronaldo and the cleaner it is for United, the better for everybody. And he can get on with going wherever that is, be it somewhere for a lot of money or back home to Portugal or maybe a surprise move somewhere that none of us saw coming. I don't know. He's certainly, and I stick by my words from last week, he's a problematic soon-to-be 38-year-old for a manager. Now, some clubs might be willing to suck that up. We'll see. I mean, big clubs, we'll find out. I have my doubts about that. But I certainly hope that we see the good side of Ronaldo in the World Cup. I don't think anybody begrudges him going out there and performing for his country. I mean, the guy's got up well over 100 caps. His goals are frightening. The difficulty for him is he's got very little football under his belt. There's a lot of psychological sort of stuff going on in his head. And the other side of the coin, all these, I don't know exactly when this interview with Piers Morgan was, but it couldn't have been too long ago, and all this stuff going on with potential terminations of contract, these things all weigh on people. Even if you're Ronaldo, you get into a World Cup, you're going to bed at night, you're thinking about it, where am I going to go next? Is my contract going to be terminated? All this kind of stuff. That's goes without saying, that is not ideal preparation when you're going into probably the last major tournament of his career.
I mean, Frank, you know what it takes to win a World Cup. How will the Portugal team be dealing with this kind of outside noise?
Well, it's a big deal because it takes two big part of the thing. It goes to from a club, Manchester United, to talk about the biggest star of the world football and the biggest star of Portugal ever, I think. And of course, it's gonna get something into the dressing room. It's up to the coach to make sure that it doesn't spray too much and they don't talk about it too much and they are more focused on what they have to do during the competition. The players, you know, of course, they know how to forget about it and be focused on what they have to do. But how Ronaldo is going to be behaving, in football-wise, I'm talking, you know, is going to depend on the reaction of the players about that topic. If it goes well, if he scores goals, and if everything goes very well for Portugal, it's going to be forgotten, as Stevie said, very, very soon. If they get out of the group stages, meaning they are eliminated, that's going to be a problem.
What do you think about Ronaldo then, Frank, when it comes to his mindset going into this? Is he just going to be immune to the criticism that he's dealing with right now and be able to focus and give 100% for Portugal?
I'm with Greg. With that, it touches the players and any players, even if you're one of the biggest star. If he's not the biggest star of the football, he's going to pretend that he doesn't care. And I've seen many players saying that. You know, I don't care. I don't read the press, and I don't pay attention to that. Now, of course, there is some question marks. As Craig's mentioned, what's going to happen with me in a month from now? What I'm going to do? How I'm going to finish my career? He wants to resolve the problem because he wants to sign for another club. So of course, in the middle between games, he will have to talk to his agent to talk about his future in a championship competition because he doesn't want to finish with the World Cup. He wants to carry on. So it's only fair that he needs to question his agent for his future. So of course, he's going to think about it.
Well, he's not immune to the criticism because you saw his reaction to the aforementioned Neville.
Yep.
When he had some criticism about, which he had from most quarters, it has to be honest. There was one or two, strangely enough, who sort of were on his side, Ronaldo that is, when he hot-footed it down the tunnel before the end of the game, which is a little strange in itself. But clearly his reaction to certain pundits, particularly in the UK, shows that nobody's immune to it. Nobody's immune to the criticism. It's just how much can he put the lack of game time and all that's going on in his head, how much can he put that behind him, leave it at the hotel and take to the stadium, a clear mindset. Can
most,
he do that?
That's a big most question. Most players, when the ball comes out, can put everything to the side. The problem is, a situation like this means that it's his preparation that's going to be affected. Because I don't care who you are, you do think about these things. And Ronaldo will be thinking about it. He won't be sleeping as well. He'll be looking over his shoulder thinking, everybody's listening to what he's saying. There'll be so many things, and what it'll do is it affects his preparation. The easy bit is the training, and the easier bit is actually playing, because you can get rid of the cobwebs, they all go away. But your preparation's affected big time.
Mark Ogden thinks that he thrives under this sort of pressure, though. It's almost as if that's what helps him to raise another level of his game.
Yeah, but he can do that when you're at your best, right?
Yeah, he thrived in this when he was 28, yeah. 29, 30. Right, when he was maybe even a little bit after that, when he was a phenomenon. I mean, a phenomenon. I remember that goal, and it wasn't too long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago at Juventus, when I've never seen a guy jump that high at the back post and head it in. I thought, Jesus, he's still doing it. But he's not that player anymore. So, it'll inspire him, but the body is the body. You know what I mean? It can only do
and the legs
37. Can only do 37, almost 38. Yeah. What your body tells you to do.
What do you think about that, Rob? What our colleague Mark Ogden thinks about Cristiano Ronaldo thriving under this sort of pressure?
No, I agree with the guys in the studio that possibly at 28, 29, 30, but it's still a distraction. Whether it's a little distraction or a big distraction, it's a distraction. And teams that win World Cups will say afterwards that their preparation was absolutely seamless. It's the teams that go through this preparation in a smooth manner that tend to win World Cups. And whether Cristiano is bothered by this or not, it's a distraction. It's going on in the back of his mind while he's meant to be preparing for a World Cup. And ultimately, that can't be a good thing.
It's happiest man on the planet. I wonder where he'll be in the World Cup's going on as a Dutch manager of Manchester United, because this has worked out well for him, because Ronaldo was a problem for him in the summer. Most of the summer we talked about Man United and some of their encouraging pre-season results, but a lot of it was driven by the journalists that were following the Ronaldo situation, and so the press conferences were highly tilted towards the Ronaldo question. Then there was a horrendous start to the season. The Ronaldo issue has never really gone away. It's been front and foremost because he was taken off. That was last year. It was Brentford he was taken off. He's hardly played. When he has played, they haven't played well. They've played better without him. Then we've had the incidents of not bringing him on in the Man City game. Then we've had this big blow-up. So the main concern for Erik ten Hag now is, now that it seems they've got rid of him, is getting some sort of short-term help, if it is short-term in January, to come in and maybe fill that position that Ronaldo could have filled. That Erik ten Hag saw Ronaldo playing, to an extent, was a guy coming off the bench when he needed them to maybe help him out. That's kind of how he saw Ronaldo. Now, Ronaldo, obviously, did not see it that way, but that's how the manager saw him. And now he's going to need somebody, you would think, bearing in mind they're in not a bad position to push for the top four in January to the end of the season, to try and maybe help out in that position. That's the sort of major thorn in Eric Ten Hag's side.
So now you've got the two sides to the coin. You've got the happiest camper, right, at Manchester United, the Manchester United manager, and you must have a guy, the Portuguese manager, lying in bed at night going, please, please play well. Because he's got the complete opposite problem as what they have at Manchester United.
He's
absolutely starting.
Yep.
Okay,
but
if
now
I
we're
may.
Going to find out. If he doesn't produce, what's the manager made of?
The dramatic scenario, is to see an injury from Ronaldo during the preparation that Stevie was talking. Because the guy, as the guy say in the studio, he thinks about it. The worst that could happen to Portugal and Ronaldo is to see Ronaldo getting injured, which I don't hope, of course, because I want to see him playing. I want to see him showing to the world that he's still the same guy. But at the end of the day, you know, if he gets injured, everybody's going to talk about it. What's going wrong, you know, with him? Is it because Manchester United terminated the contract? Is it because of him, the influence, the whatever it could be? That's going to be a nightmare.
I just got one thing, Rob. Do you know what roughly a time frame United are looking at this to make a decision? Do you think we could see some clarification during this World Cup?
That's certainly United's hope. They want this over in days. As I say, the threat privately to sue for breach of contract is not their jumping off point. That is something that they've got up their sleeve in case this drags on, but they certainly don't want that. They want this over in days. I think ideally, probably they would like it over before Portugal begin their World Cup campaign against Ghana, and that's on November the 24th. Whether that happens or not, whether that's a bit optimistic, you know, only time will tell, but they certainly don't want this to be dragging into sort of weeks and months. That's the last thing they want. They want this over as quickly as possible.
So the club, therefore, will be hoping for Ronaldo to help them in this situation, Rob, to make it as easy and smooth as possible. But why would he do that when it's going to leave him without a contract and without a club?
Well, quite. And they are relying on Cristiano to play ball a little bit with this. They need to come to some kind of mutual termination and just go their separate ways. If Cristiano wants to make this difficult, he certainly can make it difficult. Whether he's going to want to do that in the middle of a World Cup, probably his last World Cup, you know, again, only time will tell. I think they're hoping that Ronaldo wants a new club and that he's got a club or clubs waiting to sign him when he leaves Man United. Because if Cristiano Ronaldo wants to fight this through the courts or whichever measures that he wants to take it to, then he certainly can. And that's the last thing Man United want. They've told us that they want this resolved swiftly, is the word that they've used. And that means days rather than weeks.
But I think, as Rob mentioned earlier, if I was hearing correctly, that one of United's standpoints could be that they could counter-sue. So if Ronaldo was to try and take it, they could counter-sue, and it could end up costing, you know, Ronaldo himself a lot of money plus legal fees. I'm not a QC, clearly, but you know, this could get messy down that road, and I think for all parties, nobody really wants to see that.
We've heard him talk in the interview about how he had a big offer from Saudi Arabia. In fact, it was $350 million for two years.
See, I don't
years.
Understand this, because we sat here in the summer, and I think it was Gab and Jules and one or two others who are closer to the situation, maybe even Rob, who are closer to the situation than us, said it wasn't about the money when he wanted to leave in the summer. It was about the gravitas. It was about playing in the Champions League because his career was coming to an end, or it was dwindling away, and that he didn't want to play in the Europa League. He wanted to be scoring goals at the highest level.
Right, which is why he didn't take this offer to go to Saudi Arabia, right?
Well, right.
See,
well,
again,
why is he even telling us about the offer?
Again,
it's either about the money or it's not about the money.
Ronaldo again has lost the opportunity to come out on the right side of this, because he can just turn round in the next 5 minutes and say, you know what, I don't want any of the mess. I don't want to beat Manchester United. So you know what, don't sue me. I'm fine, I'm going. And it's all done and dusted. And then at least he'll get some praise, he's doing the right thing. As opposed to, all of a sudden, it's all about the money, when it wasn't about the money. So he's just, every single time he makes a move, he's making himself look worse. Can somebody tell him to do the right thing and just say, I'm done.
No, I didn't see the...
That's the easy bit.
I didn't watch the interview.
Especially if you're Portugal, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't watch the interview to be... I saw clips, but I didn't watch the interview, to be quite frank with you, because I kind of think I know which way it was going. But have I missed anything where he had grounds for complaints that he really was wronged at Man United?
Have you seen the state of the jacuzzi?
He does state where he feels that they haven't supported him, that the facilities weren't what he thought they would be, that he's been disrespected. He does state all of this to explain himself.
Listen, it's not his business what the facilities are. He's an employee of Man United. Yeah. Right, we can all... My God, when I went to Celtic, we didn't have our own training ground. I mean, come on, it's part and parcel. We don't live in an ideal world. I mean,
And then there's the contradictions he feels with the coach as well, not bringing him on
There's no such thing in a contract as respect, right? There's a thing called decisions, right? And Manchester United brought a guy in to make big decisions, because that's what that club needed. It needed restructuring, it needed big decisions, both off the field and on the field. There should be no issue with that, apart from the fact a player cannot accept that. There's no wrongdoing in that. You're not going to get any sympathy from anybody.
Okay, so he also feels that they didn't believe him in some things that he said, which was personal family issues.
Well, that's different.
He feels that they didn't believe
him. Different.
Well, that's different. So that in terms of him feeling wronged, that could explain
some of it.
They
gave him time off. That's different. But I, we can't speak to what went on that side of it. We can only speak about the main things that we saw on the field. You can't go blubbering away in an interview because a manager hasn't brought you on and hasn't respected. Well, you can do what you want, but then you have to face the consequences. I just think he has been so badly advised, unless this is what he wants to be out of Man United immediately and he can move on without his however many millions it is. I don't know. Can't answer that question.
You know, if you're a football player and you're going to a club, don't you think it's a smart move to try and find out what's going on at the club before you sign? Is that just me? You know, all of these things he's complaining about were there before he signed. So did he not do his due diligence? Clearly not. So you can't make a decision and then find out things that you could have found out before you sign and then complain about it. How about you figure it out before you do it? And then once you've made the so-called mistake of doing it, you do what everybody else does. You took the responsibility. It was your decision to go there. Now take the responsibility. Don't try and shove it elsewhere, because that's all he's done.
He moans about the training ground, and I'll go back to this subject that I touched on last week, was the manager at the time. He knew who the manager was at the time, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer,
He doesn't have anything bad to say about Ole.
Sorry?
He didn't have anything bad to say about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But he did know who was
and he thought Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the second coming of Jurgen Klopp.
No, Pep Guardiola. And he doesn't say that.
So there was a training ground was a problem? Or a manager who should never have been near that job? What's the problem? Does he expect to go into a club that's been managed by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and get Sir Alex Ferguson results? Is it the training ground's fault? I mean, absolute nonsense.
Let's talk about Sir Alex Ferguson, though, Rob, because he said that partly Sir Alex Ferguson agrees with some of what he's saying. Obviously, we know the part that he played in getting him back to Manchester United. What's been the thoughts towards Sir Alex after this interview?
I mean, Sir Alex is Sir Alex, and I don't think anything anyone could say about Sir Alex will taint what Man United fans think about him. I think it's interesting that Cristiano has mentioned Sir Alex in the interview, knowing full well that Sir Alex isn't going to come out and speak on either side. He knows full well that Sir Alex is going to keep his counsel and not say anything. So it's an easy name to drop in, particularly when everyone knows, particularly Man United fans, knows the relationship between Sir Alex and Cristiano Ronaldo, and even went into detail about how Sir Alex convinced him to join Man United over Man City. So I don't think anything is going to taint the way that Man United fans feel about Sir Alex. I just thought it was very interesting that Cristiano certainly knows which buttons to press and which names to drop in when he's giving this kind of interview.
What's your instinct tell you then, Rob, as to where he's going to go next if it isn't Manchester United, if this isn't sorted out, which it doesn't look like it's going to be? He said in the interview he wants to continue playing until he's 40. What does your instinct tell you?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the discussion that the guys have just had in the studio. It's going to be about money. He earns £500,000 a week at Man United, or upwards of that. And if he's demanding that elsewhere, that there's only a handful of clubs that can afford to pay that. You're looking at the likes of PSG, Chelsea, or even, you know, going somewhere like Saudi Arabia. If he's willing to take a pay cut and just doing it for the love of football, then that opens up a massive market. The likes of Sporting Lisbon would take him in a heartbeat. You know, Napoli would be interested. Possibly Atletico Madrid. Diego Simeone is a fan of his. It's going to depend on what his demands are. If he's demanding £500,000 a week or upwards of that, then the market for him is going to be incredibly small. And we saw that in the summer when everyone knew that he wanted to leave Old Trafford. If he's willing to take a pay cut and willing to go somewhere for a smaller amount of money and make himself affordable to these other clubs, then that opens up a much bigger market, and we could see him back at Sporting Lisbon, you know, where he started his career. Again, their manager said that they would love to have him back. It's simply about money.
Obviously, every player has to manage the end of their career. What are your thoughts on this one, Frank, as to how Cristiano Ronaldo's behaving right now, how it's being viewed, and whether it actually does affect those discussions on whether a player is the greatest of all time or not?
Well, as Craig mentioned at the beginning of the show, this segment is what he did during all his career, you know, cannot be erased by that event. But of course, as I always say, the end of your career and the retirement that you decide to have on is part of your career. And if you get out at the right time, you know, it's better to give envy than pity to the world of that you are living. It's not good. It's not good for him. It's not good for the people who love him, and it's not good for football overall. And you know, I mentioned that like two years ago when he left Juventus, and he didn't want a 1 year contract. He wanted a 2 year contract. Supposedly, it wasn't for the money, as we talked about just before. Then he wanted to sign for Manchester City. Then suddenly he signed for Manchester United. It's for me like everything is wrong for the past 2 years, and that's of course going to affect the image of the greatest of the time. Nobody, if you love football, will say that Ronaldo didn't do the job. Nobody's going to say that, because it did the job. But again, as I said before, it's sad to see that kind of exit, if it's an exit. Hopefully he's going to rebound somewhere else and he's going to be successful. I wish him the best, but it feels more the end of it than anything else.
Well, there'll be a lot more talk about Cristiano Ronaldo over on our YouTube page. Make sure to subscribe to the action over there. And also from our team in Qatar as well. But just a look at some of the other notable contract terminations. There's some of the names there: Anelka, Mutu, Joey Barton.
You don't expect to see
a Cristiano Ronaldo's name on a list like this, so it's fair to say, isn't it? Joey Barton, how did he get in there? Well, for a dispute with his teammate at Rangers.
How was he only in there once, by the way?
Anyway, yes, as I said, lots of Cristiano Ronaldo content over on our YouTube page. You can check that out anytime.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Serbia, also in Group G. They played against Bahrain today. 5-1 this game finished. Tadic with two goals, Vlahovic, Juricic and Jovic all on the score sheet in this game. But when we talk about Group G, well, it's going to be an interesting one because this is Brazil's group. Brazil, the favourites to win the whole competition. Tough. Switzerland are also in there as well. Pretty. So who have you got coming out of it?
Brazil and Switzerland, because I think Switzerland are a dogged side. Knocked France out at the Euros, I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think I've got Cameroon.
I've got Serbia.
I've got Brazil and Cameroon.
I mean, it's a tough. Brazil will come out, but I mean, some really solid teams in that.
Definitely. The Brazil fans are in fine form. They're on their way to Qatar. Funnily enough, they were on the same plane today, many of them, as Sergio Aguero, who said the whole journey was like this. I bet he was crouching down, hoping that he would not be seen. But yeah, the whole journey like this, he said. But let's talk more about Group G and send it out to our team in Qatar, Alexis, Nadim and Jules.
Yeah, Kay, the Brazil fans are definitely full of confidence and full of song here in Doha. And I'm pretty sure not all of them have arrived just yet. And why not? Because, guys, let's be honest, Brazil, this crop of Brazilian players has really been the talk of the tournament so far. And like I said, we haven't even started. Jules, with all their attacking prowess and even the experience in defense, surely they're the favorites to top the group, right?
They have to be the favorite. I think they're the favorite in every World Cup, really, not that. They win every time because they haven't won in 20 years now, by the way.
But it feels different this year, doesn't it?
I don't think it feels different.
Really?
Yeah, I think they looked very good in 2018. 2014 was different because it was on home soil and I think the whole pressure. Yeah. But that squad in 2014 was nowhere near as good as this one. This is maybe the best squad that they had since the 0-2 World Cup that they won, obviously with Ronaldo and Rivaldo and all that amazing generation. However, there's also pressure on them more than on anybody else because it's Brazil, because it's football. And I think, again, all eyes will be on Neymar for what should be, is likely to be his last ever World Cup. And I think for Brazil to go all the way and do well, Neymar needs to be at his best, needs to be the best player in this competition.
Well, you know him quite well. And of course, we could probably talk, or everyone talked about immaturity in past World Cups, so to speak. You know how, you know, one World Cup was dominated with injuries. And we know that he was probably lucky to have missed that hammering by Germany. And then another World Cup was dominating by all the memes of his antics and rollings. But now he comes in, it feels like a different player, a more mature player, 30 years of age, you know, doing absolute bits for PSG right now. Don't you think it feels like his leadership is peaking at the right time?
Yeah, I think this is the best Neymar we've seen certainly in the last 6 years, without a doubt. I think this is a Neymar that is more at peace with himself and with his own image and his own game. And I think that maybe this time the pressure, he won't really feel it so much because I think he's so confident. He's got so much momentum going into this World Cup in terms of what he's achieved with PSG, what Brazil have achieved in the last 2 years, really, even if they lost that Copa America final against Argentina, of course, which is a big blow, but they played well through the whole tournament. It was a tight final. It could have gone either way. And I really think that he approaches this competition in a very different way than any other competitions before. Marquinhos yesterday said something very interesting just before Nadim talks. He said, I know him so well. I know Neymar so well. He's my brother. He's changed his lifestyle. He's changed the way he lives for this competition, for this World Cup. This is how ready he is.
Do you think that the only way they can win is if he plays well?
Yeah, there's no doubt for me. They can replace him. You can have other players stepping up, like a Vinicius Junior, of course, like a Paqueta, like a Casemiro, anybody. But for me, he's not just the best player in that squad. He's the soul of that squad.
He's more than just what he can do on
exactly,
the pitch.
Exactly. And for me, if he does well, then the positive vibe around the whole team would be so strong, so good, that they would be unstoppable.
Interesting you say that. Well, if we're talking about this Brazil team, Nadim, I'm so happy we have you here because I do want to talk about the defense. Because if anyone picks through this Brazil team with a fine comb, everyone's talking about the 9 strikers, everything, the attacking prowess that they have. But when they get to the defense, they say, look, it's an aging defense. You know, you've got people like Casemiro there as a holding mid. You've got Thiago Silva, who's 38 years old. Do you view this as a serious weakness for Brazil, or is it kind of something good, the fact that they're so experienced?
I think the fact you said experience is the key word there, because if you want to see a negative, you say they're too old. But then if you want to see the positive, you say they're experienced, because going to tournaments does matter. Having the sense that you arrive and you know what to do to be successful, that does matter. And I think to have more of those players in your side is great. Physically, they might not be at their absolute peak, but they've still got more than enough to be able to hold a side together and go out and try and win a tournament itself. So I think it's all about perspective. some people want to see the negatives, but the reality is those guys aren't thinking, well, you know, we hope that our defense just hangs on together, because these are world-class players. You're talking about Thiago Silva. He's 38 years of age, and some people say he's not been in the best of form recently. 6 months ago, people were talking about how great he was for Chelsea and how he's like a linchpin to how they were playing. Mm. So let's not forget, like, these guys have done it before, and for me, there's nothing to worry about.
Before we move on to the other teams in the group, I just have to get you again as a defender. If you're coming up against and seeing this attacking prowess on this Brazil team, is this the best crop of attacking players that any team has at this World Cup right now?
On paper, possibly. And I can hear the people at home saying, no, what about this team? What about that team? And that's fair. That's perfectly reasonable. But the fact is, the way that it works is, you know, you can have the players that are doing well on paper, but they need to be able to perform.
Yeah.
And as well as there being some of the best attacking talent in the world here, some of the best defensive talent is here as well. And the differences between the two teams overall, whoever's playing who, isn't going to be like a 3-4-5-0, because teams have earned the right to be here and they want to try and stay for as long as possible. So I expect things to be tight.
And let's not forget, this is Tite's last competition ever as the Brazil head coach. And I think what a way it would be for the players to gift him this World Cup on his way out. It'd be amazing.
They want another star on that jersey, definitely. So, if it's two things you need to know about Julien Leroy, he does not like cheesecake. He says it is horrific for the French to mix cheese and cake
together.
And
one thing
he likes less is Swiss cheese, because it reminds him of Switzerland getting the better of France, Jules. So you don't even have Switzerland advancing from this group, but you do have Serbia. And the thing is, I agree with you, Serbia really do look like a top team, don't they?
I'm excited by them. I want to see all that
dark
talent
horses
together. I think a little bit in a way, because of Vlahovic, because of Kostic, because of all the talent that they have, the talent of the players is not the problem. Is the little issue they might have is the lack of experience. Mm. Because this is all new to them. And again, we go to what Nathan was saying earlier, experience is so important in a World Cup. Whether you've been there before, whether you've won or you failed, but you take so much from those moments. And I think for them, this is maybe where the limit is, but in terms of talent, pure talent, they can easily finish second in that group.
And what about their style of play? They do like to score goals, or they do go out there and try to score goals as well, Nathan. But how do you see them faring in this group? I know you actually went for the Swiss to get out.
I did go for the Swiss to get out, yes. So, you know, we are opposed on this occasion.
Yeah,
and, you know, I apologize for that. But, you know, in the end, I'll be proven right. But
apologize.
That's fine.
Stick to your guns,
I know, I didn't mean it. I was just saying, basically, I'll be right. I think it is interesting. I didn't see a lot of difference between Switzerland and Serbia in terms of trying to navigate this competition, because for as much as, say, Serbia are almost feel like the better side right now, Switzerland have that sort of experience. You look at the way they were in the Euros, and, you know, they've won some big games and big occasions. And I think there's some players within that squad, maybe looking like a Xhaka, who's sort of sensed this before and felt this moment. So I'm leaning that way, but obviously the way football works, we can all be proven wrong very, very quickly.
Imagine facing Vlahovic and Mitrovic as a front.
Listen, I faced one of them before.
Ooh, yeah, but not the two together.
And now I'm retired. But say no more.
What's the most thing, I suppose, that's impressed you about this Swiss team then?
I don't know. Like, it's so tough, because one team's strengths, you know, they seem like they're really apparent and everything's really good. And, you know, you talk about teams wanting to score goals, be progressive, move the ball well. But, like, everyone kind of wants to do that.
Yeah.
How many teams have arrived here by from deciding all we're going to do is try and stick to 1-0s all the way through? You know, people want to have their players going forward and scoring goals and moving the ball and controlling the game. Well, two sides can't be on the front foot at the same time. But I think in the Swiss side, they know how to manage situations better. They understand how to approach big games. And like we said before, they have the experience to be able to navigate the moments where, you know, maybe you go 1-0 down early. Don't panic. This is part of the process. The game can still go our way.
They are quite a well-organized team. And I suppose now, if we're going to talk about Switzerland, we have to talk about Granit Xhaka. We were talking about Arsenal yesterday. He's enjoying a great season now. And we talked about Neymar changing as well, and mood-wise, and how important it is. We've seen that with Xhaka. Is this the perfect time for him now to go into a World Cup and probably have the impact he'd want with Switzerland?
It is, in a way. But the difference with Granit is that the national team has always been a breath of fresh air. He's always been better with Switzerland than he was at the time, maybe for Arsenal. And he's always had, because he had that confidence, Petkovic, the former manager who left after the Euros, and Granit had a kind of a father and son relationship. Nice. Yakin, who's the head coach, of course, him and Granit have played together. I think they know each other well, but he needs that kind of relationship with his manager, the kind of like shoulder arms around the shoulder, that kind of confidence, the love, really, which he always had with Switzerland. So that was never really a problem. However, when you arrive in that kind of form, with the Arsenal form, and then I think within the dressing room, Granit is so important that I think the other players around him, especially the younger one, the Okafors, or the Vargas, those kind of players, will feed off that energy and that positive vibe that Granit has to offer to everybody. And then if you add Akanji and Mbolo, who both having very good season with Monaco and Man City, then I think he's still a very, very good Swiss team.
All right, well, let's move on now to another team in the group, and that is Cameroon. We talked so much, and we were just talking off camera about how wonderful the African teams and the vibe that they bring to World Cup, so much so that we were about to campaign to have more of them in NATO.
I would love
but
that.
That's a story for another day. That's a battle for another day. Let's talk Cameroon and Choupo-Moting. How much can he inspire them to... None of you have them getting out the group. I just want to say that I do. Listen. So what's the deal, guys?
Maybe we didn't have them getting through, but it's a tough call. You have to pick two, and you instinctively go for Brazil.
Samuel Eto'o has them all the way in the final.
Yeah. Winning even.
Well, fancy that. I wonder why we think that. But I think for Choupo-Moting, and speaking as a former defender, I just like it when my attackers are doing well, when my attackers are confident. Because, say, if you're losing a game, you believe that you can always come back in. If you're winning a game, you know they can do something else and take the game further. And, you know, it pains me to say it, but you live and die by your attackers. So if Choupo-Moting can arrive in this tournament with good confidence and know that he's going to be leading the line or helping those around him, then they make them a very tough team to play against. You know, I personally think, like, Senegal are the best team out of Africa. Yeah. But then in the same breath, we saw in AFCON how good Cameroon could be. And I think if they can take some of that form into this next tournament here, then it'll be a very, very tough side for teams to play against.
All right. Well, yesterday the breaking news of the tournament was that Sadio Mane will be missing out. That's definitely some unfortunate news. And today, some more breaking news that FIFA and the Qatari government made the ruling that they will not be serving alcohol and beer specifically at the stadiums or around the stadiums. They'll still be served in the corporate boxes. Jules, this kind of has started getting people panicking. Just wondering if there will be more discussions with the Qatari government as the tournament goes on, and maybe will they go back on some of their previous agreements, for example, the welcoming that they say that they will be giving fans from the LGBTQ plus community. Do you think there's any danger of that?
Yeah, this is the worry. We've heard from some like heads of fans association really in England and in Europe too, saying that the alcohol was really a detail. You know, even if they went back onto the agreement that they first initially have, which was selling it everywhere, that's what I think worry the fans the most, is that, okay, but what could be next? Now, the tournament starts in 2 days. They do that just 2 days before. Is this some sort of U-turn completely on everything that they've promised that they would do before? So we will have to wait and see. The Qatari are saying, listen, alcohol is very different because a lot of the fans who will be at the stadiums are from the Middle East or from Southeast Asia or South Asia, in the sense that alcohol for them is not a big thing because they don't drink it. For the rest, we will have to see. It might be a very different approach from the Qataris, but you could also trust them that they might not make a U-turn on everything else either.
Mm. Nathan, what do you think of this? And then hearing, of course, that it still will be served and allowed in corporate boxes, but the fans now just have no access to it. Does it leave you a bad taste in your mouth?
the corporate boxes thing, it's a very bad look. It's an exceptionally bad look. To say that the rules are this way for everyone except for us, it doesn't feel right. And to be honest, what I've got to say, though, because you made the very good points about the people within this area anyway, is more so about the fact that, you know, there are lots of different stakeholders within the game itself. And I think sometimes we are sort of looking at it from a very significant perspective. But for them, this is different. And the ones who, for me, who should be the most outraged are the companies who've paid to be able to serve the alcohol at the
one
place.
One especially. There's
not to name them, but they're the ones who probably would... They're the ones who are going to suffer the most. Like a World Cup, you know, we're used to seeing the scenes that we've seen in the past, but we're somewhere different now. Mm. And this is the culture of this region. And ultimately, we didn't have a say in terms of whether the things should be here. But now that it's here, do we walk into somebody else's house and tell them how we should do things? Yeah, and I think for FIFA, they've got some decisions which they're being made, and everybody's paying attention to what they're doing. Yeah. But I'd just be very wary of vilifying the nation that is sticking to what they did previously, because nothing really has changed from them from when they were first awarded the tournament 12 years ago.
Well, as I say, when in Rome. So, of course, it already feels like an eventful World Cup so far, and we haven't even officially started. So, in the meantime, it's back to UK.
Group F looks like this in the World Cup. Belgium, Canada, who, as we know, Frank Leboeuf, is going very far in this tournament. Morocco and Croatia as well. Who did you guys have coming out of this one, then? Can you remember,
Stevie? I have got Belgium and Croatia.
Same.
I think I've got Belgium and Morocco. Can't remember. Think so. Yep. Couldn't quite go for Canada.
Yeah. They might not get out of that, Belgium.
no, possibility.
By the way, it was a full house yesterday.
Was a full house yesterday. Make sure to check out the latest Extra Time over on YouTube today. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just taking a look at some of the training images from Qatar where the players are preparing for the upcoming World Cup. It has been very hot, shall we say. The high today was 92 Fahrenheit. That's 33 Celsius. 80% humidity.
Why did you look at me when you said that as if I had no clue what Celsius is? You went, that's 33 Celsius, you very thick boy over there.
I wasn't saying that at all. That was for everybody else because I know I'm going to be able to...
You looked at me when, you're not the brightest, that's 33.
That's not true. I know I'm going to be able to come to you and ask you about playing in such temperature.
Ask me about temperature, Fahrenheit, Celsius.
But let me first go to Frank Leboeuf because he actually has played in Qatar. He knows what it's like to play in these temperatures. What are those conditions like to be a professional athlete in, Frank?
The thing is, if you go overall during the season, it's true that in September, October, it's quite a nightmare and it's like 100, 110, you know, when you play. So you have to get used to it. And I remember, you know, doing my first training session with a bag of ice and I put it in my head because it was even 9 p.m., but I couldn't run anymore. But in October and November, and especially in December, the weather is quite nice. Where, well, yeah, it's hot, but it's not like it is in France, like it is in Spain, the end of spring and the beginning and during the summer. I remember playing in Strasbourg when we were promoted. It was like 35 degrees, which is for Craig like 90 degrees, 90, 92, 1 degrees, to make sure you understand what I'm talking. And that's okay. That's okay. You can play with that. I played 2 years in Qatar. And you don't need air conditioning for the fans and, of course, for the players when you play in October, November, December. For sure, you don't need that because it's like summertime in south of Europe. And that's fine. Yeah, it's hot, but it's not that hot. It's quite okay to run like that, and it's possible. We had World Cups in 98 in France. We played in Lyon. I think it was 3 p.m. It was a nightmare. It was nightmare. It was so hot. It was under the sun, and it was more than 91 degrees, Craig, than it is in Qatar. So that's going to be fine, you know. And I don't know. I complained to FIFA 2 months ago. I said, why don't you explain to the world that playing under the condition in November and December doesn't need air conditioning? Because it hasn't been said by FIFA or by Qatar. It's why they postponed the World Cup. So it's hot, but it's hot like summer again in south of Europe.
France 98, those conditions, what were they like?
Ah, for the Brazilians, they were a nightmare. For us Scots, it was easy. Easy. I don't know, actually, the conditions in France were pretty perfect. You know, hot, but not crazy hot, as long as you were hydrating and there was always drinks at the side of the pitch and all that sort of rigmarole, so not a problem. Maybe it's a drier heat in the Middle East. I don't know at that time of year. I certainly know that this tournament could never, ever have been played. Well, it could have been, but it would have been a health disaster for the players had they even tried to go ahead in May and June, because having been there to the Middle East at that time of year, it's difficult enough to walk out a hotel. So that was all sort of pie in the sky. And trust me, we would have had fatalities, I think, playing in heat of up to 115 degrees. I think these conditions, it seems on the face of it, are going to be not too bad at this time of year. So that's acceptable. There might be the odd case where it gets a little hotter. And I think you said today was a high of 92, which seems hot. Don't laugh, 30 how many Celsius. So I think that's going to be fine as long as the players are hydrating, yeah, for sure.
What about Mexico, Stevie, though? That was probably a whole new ball game.
Well, it was impossible, you know, and actually what it did was that I think the tournament suffered because you can only play in little fits and starts when it's that hot. You know, we were playing at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
In Mexico. I mean, a bunch of ginger-haired, pale-faced Scotsmen running around at 2 in the afternoon in Mexico, seriously. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
What factor did you wear?
I was factor 1,000, and I still got burnt to a cinder. I mean, and you couldn't play football. That's the bottom line. You couldn't run.
There was somebody running behind him with a can spraying him as he was running. I mean,
what does it actually feel like? Does it feel like everything's slower? Does it feel like you're thirsty? What does it feel like?
It feels as though...
Have you never been in the heat before?
No, hold on.
What happened? You lived in Miami. I think you're asking about heat.
I've never played World Cup game in the heat before as a professional
athlete.
Have
you played one in the cold?
What happens is when I say you play in fits and starts, so you actually try and run properly, but the problem is it takes you so long to recover after you've run because of the heat and because there's no air. There's no air to breathe. So it's just crazy. And so the one thing we can tell you is we're going to see some good football because the conditions are going to be what they are. They're going to be 80, which is fantastic. We'll see some real football, not like we did in 86.
Does anybody know what the temperature was in Mexico in 1986?
In 2 Fahrenheit o'clock, and Celsius.
June the 17th. Was it hot, was it?
You have some games at night, and at night it will be like 23, which is like 73 Fahrenheit. So it's... don't laugh, okay? But it's completely normal. It's a normal season to play football, and it's great. Yeah, Mexico was a nightmare. I remember Italy in 90, that was a nightmare as well. Again, France in 98, when you play against Paraguay in the last 16, in Lens, which is north of France. That was hot. That was crazy hot, and it was almost unbearable for the player. It was hot. You are out of breath very quickly. If you're English, you're getting red very quickly as well. So it's really a nightmare.
Can we just do the rest of this summer? winter. I mean, it was summer. It's a bleeding summer World Cup. Can we do the rest of this World Cup in Fahrenheit, please? I don't want a Fahrenheit. All right, we'll do a daily Fahrenheit Celsius. There you go.
I am always having to ask what the other one is. I'm always confused.
We'll just stick to one. Stick to one.
Celsius, please.
Fahrenheit. 76.
I want to talk to you guys, though, about playing so quickly and having the little break that they have had to be going into a tournament like this right in the middle of a season. How do you think that's going to affect them?
I don't know. It's a hard one. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. I'm too busy talking about temperatures.
If somebody had said to you, right, it's up to you, you would absolutely have played now than wait till the end of a full season and play.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because your legs, you're knackered.
Right.
You're shattered. Mm. And I remember before we went to Mexico, playing in the FA Cup final, and after the game, somebody said to me, "Go on, enjoy your break." In Mexico, and I was like, oh no, because my legs had gone. I was knackered. And then I had to go to a World Cup. I mean, absolutely, you would have it now.
So that's the same as him, because the 98 when we went, I played every game. I don't think I missed a game at Celtic that year. And so I played every game, Cup, European, League. And like him, your legs are a little weary. And you do get a little break, but guess what? Then we travel to the US, you end up travelling. You train almost every day with the national team. Oh, and they arrange friendlies, you know, in heat, in freaking Washington in May. I'll give you hot.
Can't
Washington
breathe.
In May, I've never
Can't
known
breathe.
Humidity like it.
Yeah.
And so, by the time the World Cup comes around, you're off the back of a whole season. Mm. Clearly, this is not an ideal scenario, but it's like having a week's break for these players in between having 3 or 4 league games. they're fit. They're up to, most of them are fit. Some are carrying a little knocks. They're up to speed. They're sharp. They haven't had a whole season.
Fatigue shouldn't be a problem.
I think when they come back from it, maybe that's a different scenario. Although I don't really think it will be.
Yeah, it's going to be
because a lot of them will get a rest.
Craig, it's going to be a problem for European players, like in France, where normally have a break in winter, where they don't have that in the Premier League or in the Scottish League. So it's going to be strange for them to carry on playing, you know, while it's normally they have that break. But I agree with the guy. They're going to be fitter now that they're going to be when you are. That when you are at the end of the season, because at the end of the day, you have the break, you know, that you normally get, but you don't have the time to recover and re-prepare yourself. It happened in 2002, or most teams being kicked out because they played so many games, and the World Cup starting 15 days before it normally starts. So that's what it is. It's better to play a competition like that in the middle of the season where you are completely fit and you're ready to go for it and don't have a break, in fact, like that you don't re-prepare because it doesn't help you out.
Talking of hot people, Gab Marcotti has now arrived in Qatar. Ah. And so the latest Gab and Jules podcast will be from Qatar. Make sure.
I tell you what, not being funny, but he's already sweating up.
He's
in the
paddock. He's got a sweat on, isn't he?
He's sweating up in the paddock and he's just off the flight.
Check out
Look
the latest edition.
Look at Jules, there's not a bead of sweat in here, Jules. Look at him. Cool as you like.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Still got plenty of football action for you on ESPN Plus this weekend ahead of the kickoff of the World Cup. Lots of friendly games for you to feast your eyes on. We've got some League One action too, so make sure you catch those games on ESPN Plus. Finally have to bring up my World Cup picks.
Go on then.
I did them a little while ago. Last but not least. It's not very exciting.
No, as yours as...
When you say a little while ago...
I'm going to be nice here. As yours as flamboyant... It's Frank.
Definitely not. I did go for Senegal before I knew about Sadio Mane, but I'm going to stick with them as well because remember that they lost out on the fair play rule in the last World Cup.
No.
I thought that was really unfair for them. So I'm hoping things go better for them.
Not fair. I don't remember that.
It was
You're not far off most of
the fair play rule. I think I'm about the same as most of you, actually, even when you see my bracket and how it goes further.
Have you got the US going through?
England and the US going through from the group. Then it comes to, obviously, the round of 16.
Who's winning, Netherlands or the US?
I think I've got for Netherlands, if I remember rightly.
US hater.
Against Argentina, Spain taking on Brazil in the quarters, semi-finals. Argentina against Brazil, I know that a lot of people have this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Who have you got? You're going for Argentina? Oh, we'll have to wait, don't we? Right, England, Senegal. You've gone for Senegal, clearly, haven't you?
Nope. I'm going to go for my England here to face France, France.
Yeah.
And Belgium against Uruguay in the quarters.
You got Belgium beating Germany.
I do.
You got England failing again.
I've got a few concerns for Germany. France against Belgium there, yes, and then Argentina, Brazil. As we saw France, Belgium in the semis.
Go on, it's Brazil, France, isn't it?
France, and I've got Brazil winning the whole thing. Not so crazy, right?
No, it's not bad. No. Where's Canada?
Solid.
Yep.
Solid.
I'll tell you who wasn't so solid. It was Frank Leboeuf.
Oh, it was.
Frank, do you like my picks?
You know, I've known you for years, and your job is doing, you're doing your job fantastically. You're a beautiful person, you're a fantastic human being, but can I be a little bit critical? You're so predictable, okay? You're so predictable. And I'm so upset right now because I was thinking that that English girl coming from Middlesbrough will find something, you know, a little bit more spicier than what I see. There is nothing much, you know. Like everybody else, you are predictable.
I know there's going to be a surprise that we all didn't expect, but I couldn't predict that surprise. That's why it's going to be a surprise. Yeah, I know that's not going to go that way.
One of the reasons Frank is on this show because he just... EA thinks outside the box.
And Frank, are you still confident in your picks?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course I am, you know. Denmark beat France twice. They beat the World Cup holder. So, of course, they're going to win the World Cup. I talked to Peter Schmeichel yesterday. He's as confident as I am. So, that's good.
Listen,
I'm happy.
Let me tell you. I saw a quote from Peter Schmeichel this week that he thought the Ronaldo situation could be resolved. only a goalkeeper could say that.
Yeah, true.
Listen, if Denmark win the World Cup...
I think Peter said, I'm not talking out of turn, paraphrasing, I believe in fairy tales and I hope the Ronaldo situation can be resolved. I'm like...
Wow. Well, he can't be wrong all the time, smokes. You know? He can't be wrong all the time.
So yeah. Frank believes in fairy tales as well.
But at least Frank has put himself out there and been a bit more unpredictable with his picks, shall we say.
Unpredictable, that's very nice of you.
That's just a nice way of putting it. Anyway, make sure to join us throughout the World Cup. We will be live every single night, 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus with all the reaction. And that all starts tomorrow. We'll have the team in Qatar.
We've got a team in Qatar?
We've got a team in Qatar and a team right here in Bristol.
Jolly up. Jolly up in Qatar. Marcotti's already there.
It's a little bit more expensive of a jolly up than it could be, though.
Well, see, all those people complaining about not getting a beer, I've got loads in my fridge. Loads.
Thank you so much for being with us. Stick around. Extra Time is actually coming from Qatar tonight with Alexis, Jules and Nadim.
Welcome into Extra Time.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah,
you're gonna be first one here.
I was trying to give it some fibras. Jeez, everyone's like, yeah, we're in Qatar. Yes, our first one live from Doha for the FIFA World Cup. We're absolutely buzzing, despite Nadim's monotone voice.
Come on, be better than that. Be better than that.
Be better than that.
Come on, don't get me like that.
All right, shall we get in some questions?
You going on your phone?
Nadim's in.
She's never paying attention. She's just going on her phone. She's on TikTok.
I would send them here. We're on location. Where am I going to get the
printer? My bad. Yeah, don't worry about this paper here.
This paper was given to me.
Don't worry about this paper.
Listen.
Anyway, let's go.
Wait, is it 30 more days?
Let's go. How do you say, Gabon Jules?
30 more days.
Let's go.
Okay, Nadim's interior decorator. Big up Nadim's interior decorator. Always some top questions for Jules. Who will France miss the most at this tournament? Pogba, Nkunku, or Conte?
It's a very good question. I think Pogba. Simply because as good as, and we were discussing that in the car yesterday.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
We have deep discussions on
camera. As good as Conte is, of course, and the activity, the energy, all the ground that he covers, all of that, this is fantastic, this is great. Pogba brings you on the pitch and off the pitch something that you don't have right now in terms of leadership, in terms of experience, of course, in terms of what he can do with the ball, in terms of detecting the play, slow it down, move the ball quicker, going right, going left. All of that will be missing, and Rabiot and Tchouaméni, who are likely to replace them too, are great. It's just not the same.
Rabiot's your boy. I hope he's not watching this.
No, Rabiot's my boy. He knows.
I'm just saying, don't listen. I've said this is not the same.
It's his first ever World Cup. Pogba won the last one, so just that is a big difference.
Jules, you know when parents say they don't have favorites?
Adrien, I love
Jules
you.
Jules said that about this France team, but now we know he's lied. You know what, Adrien? It's okay. We got you. Maduro Deepak wants to know, is this going to be the worst World Cup ever? What's up with that negative vibe?
Is that for everyone or?
Yeah, I think everyone. For NATO.
Is it going to be the worst World Cup ever? Like,
I guess because of all the controversy surrounding it, the rulings that we heard
today. For me, I've got to jump in at this point because I understand that everyone watches things for different reasons and they have different beliefs.
In different ways. Yeah.
Exactly. Lots of different ways to consume it and whether you want to be here, don't want to be here, and so on and so forth. But for me, I'm looking forward to watching some of the best players in the world compete against each other to achieve the goal of winning a World Cup, which most people who did what I did dream of doing. And they all get the chance to do that here and in other places all around the world. For them, they're in a difficult situation, but they didn't have a say in terms of where it was going to be, but they've earned the right to be here. It was through the qualifications, through being selected for the national teams. And they're going to go out there and give it their absolute all, because there's nothing greater for your identity than representing your nation and being successful with them. So when you say, is it going to be the worst World Cup ever? It might be for you. But for me, I'm looking forward to being in the stadium and seeing maybe Messi for the last time on the international stage, maybe Ronaldo for the last time, seeing Neymar take the pressure on board and try and do that. Because I love World Cups, I really do.
And also, I think this is a rare time where, if you look at it, apart from Cristiano, maybe for the reasons that we know, but every single big star is at his peak, is at his best. Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, Lewandowski, and you can go on, like Pedri, Kimmich, all those names, all the big players who will make a big difference, in this competition. They're playing at their best. It's not like you're coming back from an injury, sure there's some players missing, Mane, Pogba, all of that.
Yeah.
But everybody is at their best.
Everyone's perfectly entitled to have their view on the bigger picture around the World Cup itself. But for those players and for the fans who want to see those players, this for them is going to feel like it has them for the other ones. Because the moment ball is kicked, that's what they want to see. Yeah. And when the game's over, they'll go on to do something else. I understand, and I totally get everyone's right to see things differently. But for some, the World Cup is the most important thing. And as we can see from some of the people we see walking around here, they're really excited about getting the chance to watch some of the best players in the world.
I think it's definitely brought some of the cultures probably that we didn't expect together as well. And at the end of the day, we're all fans of the game, fans of this beautiful game. And that's what we're here to see at the highest level. And I think those World Cups just have a way of delivering. So it doesn't matter where or when, it's here. Oh, we're
she's
gonna
on the phone again.
We're gonna,
she's on the phone.
Because I have to read the next question. Jeez and ages. Luis wants to know, Jules, we all know that France is getting knocked out of the group in the group stages.
Luis should behave.
Because of the champions curse, but are you prepared for it? So,
Luis, I think this is a good question about the champion curse, my friend. But I think this is different. And I'll tell you why.
Frenchman says it's different about France.
Why? Because the French.
Oh, sorry, he's not French. He's from Parisian. French.
He's Parisian. He's not French.
I am from Paris.
Jules has been walking around with a shirt that says Parisien. And I was like, why don't you just walk around with a France shirt? And he's like, oh, no, because I am Parisien.
I'm Parisian before being French, okay?
Oh, okay.
However, Luisito. However, Luisito.
Luisito.
He might be Big Luis, You never know.
Actually, it's Luis Jr. So he's Luisito. A junior. So he's a Luisito.
Exactly. It happened to France before, 98, 2002. Deschamps was there in 98, not there in 2002. However, he knows enough people who were in that 2002 team that failed so badly that I think they would have learned the lesson. He would know the lesson and what not to do in this World Cup in 2022 compared to 2018, to fail in the group stage like Germany before, like Italy and like Spain as well. So I would want to hope, I want to believe that the French will approach it in a very different way. But it's hard. It's hard when you're the World Cup holders. There's a lot of players who were not there in 2018 who are there in 2022. There's expectations on you. And the World Cup, as we were discussing the other day, again, it's thin margins.
Yeah.
And I think you can go easily from winning it to crushing out early like we've seen in the last few World Cups.
And in case that happens, we've ordered a dozen cheesecakes for you so you can drown your sorrow.
No chance.
And maybe some carrot cakes, Jules. Jules doesn't believe vegetables belong in cake. Okay, fair play. Anushul wants to know, who will be the dark horse this time and one big team who you think will exit early? So, Belgium's always... I feel like we've been calling Belgium the dark horses for so long, right?
No, they can't be. If you rank as highly as they are,
That horse is tired.
They can't be as highly ranked. And obviously
that horse needs to be taken out.
People don't live and die by the rankings, but you're up there for a long time for a reason. They can't be a dark horse now.
One dark horse.
Spins on for you. You ready for this? Because we had our previous dark horses, and sometimes it's some of the teams from Africa and so on. Like, I like Senegal.
Yeah, of course, me too.
But there's somebody here who doesn't think, for example, the team that made it to the semi-final last time won't get past the quarter-final. Yeah? So if they go further than you think that they will, doesn't that make them a dark horse in itself?
I don't think so.
Why not? Because a dark horse could be a team that makes out the group but then goes out in the 16th.
This is my way of seeing this draw and this bracket. Everybody could have a different opinion on that team.
Yeah, but which...
Just say it, Jules. Who is it?
You're talking about Croatia, yeah?
No, I'm talking about England.
Oh, England.
Nah, England can't be dark horses.
No, but why not? No. Because you think they're not going to achieve anything, and lots of people do as well. So what happens if they do?
No, I feel like a lot of people expect England to achieve something.
No.
Dark horse can't be a
big
team.
You think England is an expector?
The dark horse is to be a team that is not a big team, yeah. Not a big country.
That
overachieves or goes far.
No, but England is a big team. England is a big team.
Goes far or overachieves?
England is a top team. We know
goes far or overachieves? Answer the question. Which
goes far. Goes far.
Okay, so which team are you having as a dark horse?
This is Senegal.
To get to which position? To get to which round?
Even with Sadio, quarterfinals is already...
You think quarterfinal? You think so, yeah.
And then anything is possible.
Nadim, who's your dark horse?
I was going to say Senegal as well.
Okay. All of that for them to just agree.
You're welcome.
And then
one big team
to exit early.
France. What?
Oh, snap.
I've got
sorry?
Yeah, French Tourette's or Krebs. I don't know.
Sorry.
I think that's a tough one, you know. It's a tough one because when we say the big teams, which teams are we really talking about here?
So Uruguay. You don't see Uruguay progressing. You said Uruguay would be knocked out in the group stages.
Yeah,
so.
But I was just trying to be nice.
You can't come back on your bracket. So
okay, so Uruguay. Uruguay is a big team.
I've got them going through. For me,
Uruguay.
There's no big teams that... Is out in the group stage in this tournament. Okay. Everybody will play. I mean, Switzerland is
a competitive team.
Yeah, but not a big team. If you want a big shock, I don't think he will come in this competition.
Yeah, nor do I actually.
All right, wow.
But you know, people want us to be wrong, so let's be wrong.
People. All right. Final question. Jack Patel wants to know how many days would Stevie Nicol last at the Qatar World Cup, considering the ruling on alcohol earlier today.
And the heat. The heat's the thing.
He would land at the airport, step out, felt that humidity we felt, and walk right back on a plane.
But then also, I don't know if this is something that's supposed to be said, but I think alcohol does exist here, but just not at the stadium.
Just not at the stadium.
So for Stevie, somebody who likely wouldn't go to stadiums, yeah. I don't think
However,
that really would affect him.
Shepherd's pie. I haven't seen any shepherd's pie. Whatever he likes.
I went for a walk earlier.
Cottage pie.
I went for a walk earlier.
He thought it was shepherd's pie, but it's cottage pie.
I found an Irish pub.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's TV if you want.
So where there's will, there's a way.
Yeah.
So there we go. The first one done. Is that right?
Yeah, the first one done. First extra time done. And we want to invite Stevie Nicol. I don't think he'll come, though. I think
absolutely
it's too long.
Absolutely not.
Flight.
No way.
And he's always like babysitting, dog sitting, cat sitting, something sitting, babysitting Dan. It's a hard job. Somebody has to do it. And that's why we have Stevie Nicol. Well, thanks, guys. It's our first extra time done all the way from Doha. We'll be back with more ESPN FC tomorrow, live from here, as we continue talking and counting down to the FIFA World Cup.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.